Double Take is an extension of the award-winning movie review show Cinema Classics, which airs Thursdays at 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and discussion with guests. Double Take is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Oh, sweet FeedSpot. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Mary Urena.
And this is Double Take. So what do you know about New Jersey?
A little bit. My husband hails from New Jersey. In fact, my husband was born and raised in the same county as Bruce Springsteen.
The movie is called Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere.
I was having a hard time actually remembering it, and I just kept referring to the film as Springsteen before the colon.
Isn't that so goofy? Set it up for us, Mary.
We find ourselves with Bruce Springsteen after he's just finished the tour for the River album in 1982.
Okay.
And he's returning to his home county, renting a home in Colts Neck, New York.
Okay.
He really starts to develop what's supposed to be his next album, which the record producers and company want to be full of singles and more top 10 hits.
Right.
And he goes to a very different place. And we follow him on this journey to get his album, Nebraska, produced.
So about that serial killer.
We find Bruce watching a lot of late night TV and not being able to sleep, and he comes across the film Badlands, starring a very young Sissy Spacek and Martin Sheen, which is inspired by the story of Charles Starkweather.
Right.
And the spree killings he went on in the late 1950s in Nebraska. Story, dark film. Bruce goes to a very dark place and actually does research and tries to write a song from the viewpoint of the spree killer, Starkweather.
You can imagine how his producers just scratched their heads at some of this dark stuff.
Well, they certainly did once he presented the completed album, tried to get it produced with the E Street Band, but he just wasn't satisfied because he had created these songs in the makeshift studio on a cassette, what was supposed to be a cassette demo tape, and could not quite capture the feeling that he wanted to capture as an artist that sounded like the acoustic tape he had developed.
Yeah.
His friend and manager, John Landau, went to great lengths to get this album produced as he wanted it. As an artist, it probably represents Bruce Springsteen very well. I wish I could say that the film was about his music.
I know.
It's actually more about his reflections during that very dark period and actually going into depression about his father's mental health struggles when he was growing up, how he has never adequately dealt with that. And he himself actually starts to go into pretty severe depression.
Wow. Yeah, you know, Mary, if one thing this film shows me is how difficult it is to be an artist, no matter what your situation. If you're going to be at the top of that food chain, you are going to go through some very difficult times. I've heard it before. This brings it home. Also, the negative side of this film. The film is just as depressing as he is.
It is depressing. It's a well-crafted film in terms of its style. There's some really great merits to it about exploring the artistic process. But I found the elements of his reflection back to his childhood and other aspects of it to be very disjointed. There are scenes where it's in black and white, where he's reflecting on the childhood home he grew up in Freehold that just show up. And then we have a reflection of him remembering that his dad took him and what I presume is his sister to visit this beautiful farmhouse out in the country.
Yes.
The kids get out of the car and run through the cornfields. But we have a young girl who's never identified. She just shows up. And after remembered that he watched The Night of the Hunter, which is a really creepy film about a killer played by Robert Mitchum, that his father took him out of school to watch that film with him.
Yes.
And you see this little girl randomly. It's really creepy. And unexplained. So there's a lot of disjointed scenes.
Well, Mary,
like
would
that.
You agree that the whole section, a significant part of this film, is about his relationship, his love affair with Faye? And I'm not even sure that's real.
Surprisingly, even though this film is fairly factual.
Yes.
Bruce Springsteen and John Landau were actually on the set several times.
Jeremy Strong is terrific.
He is terrific as Landau. But Faye apparently is a composite of probably many female friends and or lovers that he may have had during this period in his life. But she provides the truth to him when they become close. She has a daughter. She's working as a waitress in a restaurant. He starts to develop a relationship with her and her daughter, doing things together, taking her daughter out. And then he drops off the face of the earth. And she, after he finishes the album, she tells him, you need to get over whatever it is that you have. She's kind of the truth teller in all this, which may be the role that women may have played for him in his life. I don't know that. But that becomes the tipping point after he's gotten the album made and he's now moving to California out of the blue. But his parents legitimately did move to Southern California. So it's that transition and during that time that he really hits rock bottom for the first time of his depression.
Well, the film does for me satisfy in a small way an urge I always have when I see a film about an artist to witness the inspirations that they have. They don't have too many of those moments. You do see him slipping into doing songs, but I don't even get the close connection between him and Charles Starkweather. I just don't understand. Where does he get this?
It's actually true. Yeah. I did see an interview with Bruce Springsteen on CBS Sunday Morning a couple of years ago, and he visits the house that he rented in Colts Neck and shows the bedroom where he actually produced the album. And he talks about having seen Badlands and becoming obsessed with Charles Starkweather. My dime store psychology is that he had a father who was violent, who would go into these violent rages and depressions. He had mental health issues, as we surmise and learn as the film goes on. I think he's trying to understand, like, what causes somebody to be so mean and so violent as a metaphor for his father.
Yeah.
Now, his father didn't become a serial killer or spree killer, but I think that's where that obsession maybe comes from, is trying to understand the viewpoint of someone who's clearly very damaged and able to inflict such harm on other human beings.
Yeah. The way the dad interacts with the young Springsteen gives you some idea of the turmoil within that man, Springsteen, who seemed pretty cool on the outside, but things are just churning inside of him, a large part in his relationship with his dad. In one place where they're sparring, dad forces him to spar, and he keeps using the hand that dad tells him, no, he wants the other one. And you can see that Springsteen is still his own person. And the dad,
rebelling even at age 7 or 8.
Yeah. And I like that part. But the rest of it is not fleshed out enough for me, and does it spill into the music. There's the thing. I don't get the connect between his life and his, other than that he'll go to Asbury Park or wherever he'll ride on the merry-go-round. And
that is Asbury Park, that carousel really does exist.
Oh, my goodness. Great. Oh, yeah. So I got that. You were indicating it's fragmented.
It's very fragmented. For me, it didn't connect the dot. If you're a Springsteen fan, you'll appreciate the effort. And also, at age 76, Springsteen allowing this to be made and documenting a really dark part of his life, but probably a part of his life that represents who he is most as an artist. But it still doesn't make for a very enjoyable journey.
If you're there to listen to his music, you're not going to get that much of it.
You are not going to get that much of it.
And Jeremy Allen White is quite good, reminding me of the Elvis Butler, these guys you might
and
be
Timothy
aware.
Chalamet.
Yeah,
Bob
and Chalamet,
Dylan.
These young guys who suddenly you say, boy, they are talented.
Well, and he actually had to learn how to play guitar for this.
Isn't that, Mary, that just sounds harmonica. I just can't believe that.
And when you read the credits, he actually does the singing. I think playing, although they strategically don't show him playing the guitar sometimes. He did learn how to do all these things. And in fact, Bruce Springsteen gave him one of his guitars. It wasn't the guitar that he composed Nebraska on, but it was one from that era.
Oh, how wonderful. And let's talk about other musicals, bio musicals. Right now, Mary, we're getting into the high season. You're going to see some really good movies. And what do you suggest for Springsteen?
See?
Deliver Me From Nowhere. What do you suggest?
Sadly, I don't think this is a film that is destined for awards or to become a classic.
Yeah, he might get a nomination. He might, or Strong, for me, should be nominated.
There's that I would agree with.
Boy.
But the film overall, not going to traverse the same journey that Crazy Heart did, which was by the same director and writer.
Scott Cooper. Oh, there's a difference. That's an Oscar winner. But that is a large part because of Jeff Bridges.
Large part because of Jeff Bridges.
I know.
I don't know if Jeremy Allen White carries the weight.
No, not.
Of that Bridges did in Crazy Heart and his role as Hank Thompson.
I have to admit it. Well, Mary, we're still talking about Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. If you're a hardcore Springsteen fan, you're going to want to see it. You're going to enjoy it. I'm not a hardcore fan. I admire him very much, the way I might Dylan or any of the iconic singers. But I know him better because of this, and yet I long to hear this young, talented young man, Jeremy Allen White, to see him play him, the way I did when Joaquin Phoenix played Johnny Cash.
You know, walk the line.
Yeah. When I look at something like that, I think this is an extraordinary.
It's interesting you chose that film to talk about and that performance to compare, because as a film and as a story, the way it was written and crafted, with Walk the Line, you really follow Johnny Cash into the depths of his addiction and other issues in a much more empathetic way than I think the portrayal of Bruce Springsteen by Jeremy Allen White does in terms of his mental health issues in his family, as well as
his
depression.
You have to be whacked out to become a...
You have to be a genius, and you have to be tortured to be an artist, apparently.
And I'm glad I'm not a genius, because these people are going through stuff that I wouldn't be able to get. It seems almost like a cliche. Oh, yeah, of course they're going to be screwed up because they're geniuses, but it doesn't always have to be that way.
It's not always that way, but there are... The reason they make good cinema is because there is the cliche and the stereotype. And although each individual artist's journey is different, without the juxtaposition of challenges in life, how rich and deep would their art be?
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite biopic films is A Coal Miner's Daughter. That is Loretta Lynn's life story. Right. I'm sure there were dramatic licenses taken, but I mean, she came, talk about coming from nowhere, Deliver Me From Nowhere. She came from coal mining, holler.
That is memorable. I think she may have gotten an Oscar for that.
She did win an Oscar for that, and she also did her own singing.
Gosh, that's...
And that story is now going to be on Broadway, starring Sutton Foster.
Oh, and I love Sutton Foster.
So you have a film like that that shows where she came from, shows how she developed as an artist, shows the trials and tribulations of growing up poor, of what happens when sudden fame hits you. She had a physical collapse as a result of going too strong, too fast, trying to be everything for everyone, including the breadwinner for her family. It's very well done. And she was tortured in a different way. But she chose to speak through her music. You look back now and you see it, but a lot of her songs were very much about women and women's plight, which during the time may not have been taken that way, but she clearly indicated that several of her songs were about just that later in life.
And there's a perversity in all of this, the perversity from the audience who expects and wants to see them go be tortured because they're so famous and so wealthy. And so,
that's rather cynical.
I love it. I know it. They say, well, of course. What do they expect? They got fame. They have talent. They have money. And so they should suffer. And you sit there and that's wrong. However, it's a paradigm that we expect. And that's why with Springsteen, no big surprise, Dad's schizophrenic, beats him up in not the most physical way, but he just beats him up mentally. Mom is there and she's just a cipher. I expect that. So is it something about it that I go in and, oh, okay, so what else is new? Would you put him in the same category as Bob Dylan?
Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah.
Or the performance?
Yeah. Well, I would say Springsteen and Dylan, as they're depicted in the biopics. Do you see any similarity there? These are the most recent in memory, I think.
Well, you certainly see artists who want to be true to themselves as artists and are pushing the envelope. You have Dylan, having done the folk music and the acoustic guitar, wanting to switch to electric. As an artist, he's evolving, he's growing. And you see that with Springsteen. He has already become famous. He's already doing sold out tours. And at age 32, because of his tortured past and relationship with his dad, he still has a lot that he wants to express as an artist. And with watching him make the album Nebraska, where he goes to some very dark places, and you have to think that it's cathartic for him You see him evolving as an artist as well and not succumbing to necessarily what the producers and promoters want.
And I like that part of it. I'm glad you mentioned that. I like that part of it where he stands up for what he wants. And then Strong, I think, says, you know, if we don't do this, we don't have jobs.
Right.
They're saying, you know, why are we going through this?
Yeah, Landau says that.
We don't have jobs. Well, isn't that the truth?
It is very much the truth, because their job is based on his success.
Yes, right.
And during this process, he did write most of the songs, Bruce Springsteen did, for his next album, Born in the USA.
Oh, wow.
But he was insistent that Nebraska become what he wanted it to become and not be overproduced and overpackaged. He even, to the point, says, I'm not going to do any press for this. There's singles to be released. I'm not doing a tour for this album. And he won't be on the cover.
I know.
And John Landau fought for that for him. It turned out it very quietly rose to number three on the album charts without any support.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Promotional support.
Yeah. So. Now, Mary, most recently, I wanted to query you about this one, Bohemian Rhapsody. How do you fit that in all of this?
Well, it's certainly a biopic about Freddie Mercury.
Right.
I know they took license with the timing of Queen broken up before Live Aid. And,
but I accept all that.
Yeah. I do think it was a phenomenal performance, also Academy Award winning. It does show his struggles as a gay man in this world and with a certain image and how he lived under the radar. And unfortunately, it wasn't until he was diagnosed with HIV/AIDS that he found a path to be his true self and return to the stage with Queen.
And if you want to hear the music of Queen, then you need to go to that and you will enjoy it. It is not what you're going to get in Springsteen.
No.
It's just the complete opposite.
No, which is I found to be an unusual choice for a film about a musician whose music is known throughout the world. You wanted more of the music. You get it with A Coal Miner's Daughter, Bohemian Rhapsody, a complete unknown, but you don't get it here.
Yeah. Now, there's one that came out 3 years ago, and this is Elvis.
Yes.
And so we have another winning performance.
Hollywood seems to love performances of living artists even dead artists by actors. It's amazing.
You're so right. I think it's because they identify with the tortured soul.
Probably.
And theirs is a tortured profession. One that there's all you have to do is sit through the credits to know there's so much going on in these. There has to be drama all over the place.
One that came to mind for me, because I was a huge Tina Turner fan, was What's Love Got to Do with It?
Oh, good.
Which shows the rise of Tina through her relatively poor economically childhood, getting connected with Ike Turner, her rise to fame, but also the dark side of that with regards to her abusive relationship with Ike and her finally breaking free of that.
Yeah, I think.
And stellar performances by Lawrence Fishburne as Ike Turner and Angela Bassett as Tina Turner.
Yeah. It isn't, any of them can escape the trauma. Many times, though, as in The Star is Born, which I don't think is anybody but a fiction, right?
It's fiction.
Yeah, it is fiction, but where alcohol plays a big part. That's no surprise at all. Just completely different in some sense. 1984, so we're a long time back, and this would be Amadeus.
Yes.
And what do you think?
Well, you certainly hear a lot of the music, which is so enjoyable. I mean, if you're not a classical music fan, so much of Mozart's work is in other things, other films, cartoons, commercials. You hear it everywhere, truly, as we should.
Truly a titan.
But over the top performance, probably liberties were taken.
Yes.
I'm not sure the relationship with Salieri was as evil as it is portrayed in the film, but it sure makes for great drama.
It does. He's the narrator.
Salieri, yeah. F. Murray Abraham, I believe
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Really a neat film. And Tom Hulce, or whatever his name is.
Never Tom really, Hulce, yes.
Yeah. Didn't really do that much afterwards, I think. He tried.
He's ended up in producing and directing.
Okay. I had my final one, Mary, and I know you have others, so I'm going to ask you too. And this would be The Doors, Jim Morrison.
With Val Kilmer?
Yes.
Yes.
Terrific performance.
Very strong wow. performance. Wow. And you do experience the music, and yet another tragic figure. So I actually visited his grave in Paris, which I'm glad I did when I did. I wasn't a huge Doors fan, but a friend of mine was and wanted me to take a picture. That. The bust that sat on top of it was stolen by someone. It was an actual bust of him. It had been stolen. But the sad part is fans of the Doors and Jim Morrison would go there and make a pilgrimage to see it, but they started writing the lyrics to all of his songs on the other graves around
Ooh.
His grave. And Ooh. So it's a very Ooh. Graffitied Ooh. Place. And that, to me, was very disrespectful of the people who, oh. many of whom have been buried there for centuries, to have their graves desecrated that way.
Well, Mary Arena, we didn't have any difficulty talking about this subject, even though it's a downer film.
Oh, it is a downer film. As we said, so many artists' stories are interesting because of their struggles.
Yes.
And that life wasn't as easy as our modern eyes of glitz and glamour and wealth and fame would lead one to believe, that everybody in this life experiences challenges.
Yeah. And I, even though we've tend to think of the struggling artist as a cliche, Springsteen, Delivered Me From Nowhere, seems to put it right down there and say, look, at you think this is easy? Let's show you. Though they don't, they're not extreme in it. It's just simply, it's probably a lot of home experiences for people who are looking at that.
And there's also the performance of Jeremy Allen White, which is good. I don't know whether it was written and or directed this way, but you spend a lot of time like just looking at close-ups
oh
of
boy,
his face.
Yes, you are.
And I think you're supposed to see what's happening in his head or feel his struggles, but I found that device to not deliver the emotional connection to the film or the journey.
And let me support you with my observation that in not having the music, now, frequently you hear me complain, too much music, not enough drama. All right. So in this case, we got plenty of drama.
Not enough music.
Right, not enough music. And I finally figured out why. It's because he is such a performer of the people that he deserves to have people around him, musicians and audience and so on. And we don't get that. Powerful influence, pop culture influence. And he does that because even more so than Dylan, for instance, he just strikes the chord and you don't get to see it.
Yes.
And this is what we need our artists and our Scott Coopers. We need our directors to direct us there. And while I appreciate it, I'm sure that his banker is not going to appreciate how little this movie is going to make.
Forbes' latest estimate is that Bruce's net worth is astronomical. I don't think it'll harm him too much. And he may have reached an age, he's in his mid-70s now, where documenting his life as an artist is becoming more important to him. His mother passed in 2024 when the film was being made at the age of 99. And Adele is played by Gabby Hoffman, who I remember from her child starring role in Field of Dreams and in Sleepless in Seattle. And here she is as an adult playing Adele Springsteen. So there may be some of that. And I don't want to use the term vanity project, but I think he's reached an age where sharing more openly his story and documenting it. In fact, there's a documentary being released simultaneously on Disney Plus about Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, which I have heard. If you really want to see and hear the music, that's what you need to see.
That's what we're here for, Mary. Spreading
that's right.
the word.